A mechanical engineer, an anthropologist, and a journalist walk into a boardroom. Well, while that might sound like the start of a joke, it's actually the unorthodox way of problem solving made famous by IDEO, a leading innovation and design firm based in Palo Alto. The company was founded 30 years ago by David Kelly, who, along with his brother Tom, works to build creative teams to solve problems. One early client was Steve Jobs, for whom IDEO designed Apple's first mouse as well as its first laptop. Along the way, the Kelly brothers have changed the way corporations, NGOs, and nonprofit organizations look at creativity, innovation, and working collaboratively to create new solutions. They have written a book called Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us All. It's published by Crown Business, and I'm very pleased that it brings Tom Kelly to our show today. Hello.
Great. Thank you very much.
So how would you define creative confidence?
Well, it's really a couple of things. It's the natural human ability to come up with ideas. You know, we think sometimes come up with breakthrough ideas, combined with the courage to act on those ideas. And when we did 100 interviews from the book, what we discovered is some people have the ideas, but they're too shy or they have too much fear of being judged. And so they stop there and they don't turn ideas into action.
Is it because these people, whether they're smart or confident in other areas, have no confidence when it comes to creativity and creative thinking?
Well, in some cases, they just feel like that it's rational to self-edit because, you know, if you work in a kind of a devil's advocate kind of environment, you can sit through the meeting quietly and you'll draw no attention. But if you say, now, here's an idea.
And people might shoot you down.
And people try to shoot you down. And so people do have fear associated with expressing creative thoughts.
But there's also a myth of creativity. What's that?
Well, just this myth that the world is divided into creatives and non-creatives. You know, this is especially true in the advertising world where they label them. Those are the creatives over there.
Well, I worked in advertising.
Yes, I know.
The other people weren't creative.
Yeah. But, you know, even if you have the stray creative over there, they draw their own conclusions like, oh, I must not because I'm not inside that magic circle.
Well, many young children seem to be naturally creative. What happens to that creativity as they grow older?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we think people still have it in them, and we have pretty much evidentiary proof because we've interviewed a lot of people who have done it. But what happens is it's a combination of social pressure and things that happen in the school system, and just that caring more about what other people think of you causes you to withdraw, causes you to say, oh, I'm not so creative.
I remember a teacher telling a kid who had painted a yellow sky, the sky is blue. and that kid kind of felt squelched, and I'm not sure that he did a lot of painting after that.
Right. And so sometimes our belief system about ourselves is kind of fragile. And somebody in authority, somebody who is supposed to know, tells you you're not creative. It's hard. It's hard to overcome that, and some people don't.
You argue that daydreaming gets a bad rap.
Uh-huh.
What would you say to teachers and parents who worry when they see a kid staring out the window or exhibiting signs of attention deficit disorder?
Well, it's contextual, of course, but we know that good things happen when you get your mind into the state that we call relaxed attention. You know, where you're not reading your emails, you're not engaging your brain on direct problem solving, but your mind kind of floats. You're not like sleeping, watching TV. You're kind of, you've got a problem held in your head, but you're not like bearing down on it. And you know, the history of science, for example, is full of people who came up with epiphanies in that kind of relaxed attention state.
Is this something that can be taught in our schools? Because these days, most teachers complain that they have to teach to the test.
Sure. Well, we're doing a lot of work in K-12 education, and so this is an issue. If everything is focused on just, passing the achievement test, then that, pulls attention away from this idea of nurturing the creativities in kids. It gets more of a problem after about the fourth grade, where there's in the creativity test that shows that there's a drop-off unless you continue nurturing it.
Well, how much of this is dependent on the way parents treat their kids' attempts at creativity?
Oh, sure.
Did that happen in your family?
Well, the great thing about our parents is they were really laissez-faire. Like, you could do anything and they wouldn't, it's not like they were like, artists or musicians, but you didn't get judged. So we took the piano apart and never put it back together. And they didn't, they really never held that against us. And so there was a lot of room to try things out.
And it sounds like you collaborated a lot, but you must have been different in some ways. All brothers are.
Oh, my brother and I, quite different. So he was visibly artistic as a kid. And so, you know, he would be, if you were the one of the people who insisted that, you know, people are born creative, like he's, you know, you could point to him as evidence. But I was not at all, right? He was like, you know, his favorite class was art in high school and things like that. But I took a completely different path. I was got an MBA, worked in a management consulting firm doing like spreadsheets and things. But we approach problems from slightly different perspectives, and therein lies the ability to come up with more multifaceted answers.
Well, you can apply creativity to making things, but also to thinking problems through, business problems.
Right? Oh, sure, absolutely. In fact, we start a little before thinking the problem through. We start with what we call need finding, which is finding out what is the real underlying issue. What do people need that they haven't raised their hand and asked you for yet?
Now, your brother started IDEO,
and
then you
years
joined
ago.
It?
Yes, I joined a few years later. So we've been working together a very long time.
A word that comes up often in this book is empathy. Mm-hmm. What role does empathy play in creative problem solving?
Well, we think it's huge. I mean, if there's three big themes in the book, it's start with empathy, you know, prototype to learn, and then use the power of storytelling. And so empathy is where you get outside your own brain. You're right. You're confronted with a problem. You don't probably have the answers in your head. And so we deeply believe that if you go out and observe human behavior, right, where do people have trouble? Where do they stumble? Where do they get confused? That's where you start the process of coming up with breakthrough ideas.
Well, judging from what I read in the newspapers, empathy and business don't always seem to go hand in hand. What challenges do you face in getting corporate CEOs to buy into this notion of thinking empathetically toward their customers?
Well, the thing is, the CEO is almost always on our side. Where we meet resistance, and then the young people coming into the company, no problem. Where we meet resistance, it's in the middle. It's in middle management. And, you know, I have to say I have empathy for them because their CEO is telling them we need new-to-the-world ideas and, oh, by the way, make this quarter's numbers. Hmm. And so they have to be kind of ambidextrous. They have to both have the current business buttoned down, super efficient, and if they want to survive, they've got to be thinking about the next big thing.
It sounds, again, like the schools where we'd like the kids to be creative, but we want them to score well on the tests.
Yes, those tests. Well, we believe it's possible to do both. Because if you do the creative work, it engages them more in the whole process and in the content.
My guest is Tom Kelly, who with his brother David Kelly have made IDEO into a major corporation. They've written a book called Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us All. Can you talk about the theme of self-sufficiency and how it fits into your notion of creativity?
Well, our focus is not even so much on self-sufficiency. I mean, there's the element of I trust in my ability to apply these tools. But most of the problem solving we do, both in our work at IDEO and in the D School, this program my brother started at Stanford, is about diversity. It's about multidisciplinarity, what you were talking about. You get the anthropologist in the room with the scientist and the lawyer and the business person.
Well, that's all about collaboration. Mm-hmm. But when we think of the great thinkers of the past,
yes,
Einstein didn't sit around with a bunch of other people and say, hey, how about this idea? Let's talk a bit about relativity.
Right.
He did it himself. Darwin did it himself. And I can go throughout history. Most of the great thinkers did it all by themselves.
Yes. So, you know, if, you know, these savants, these, you know, there are people in the world to whom it comes as solo efforts. But we just feel like most things that are done in the world, not just the business world, but the world at large today, most things end up being team sports.
How important is the culture of the work environment when it comes to working collaboratively?
Huge. Both the physical work environment and the social ecology of the work environment, because when, especially at the, you know, the prototyping, experimenting stage, if you have an experiment that doesn't go well, you watch really carefully to see how people react. And if they, you know, if you get fired, if they come down on you super hard, that's your sign that although they say they want you to take risks, they don't mean it exactly.
Now, I mentioned in my introduction some of the things that Odeo was involved with, designing the first mouse as well as Apple's first mouse as well as its first laptop. What did that involve? Was that a collaborative effort?
Sure. So the first mouse, so there, we didn't invent the original mouse that came out of labs like SRI, but Steve Jobs visited a place called Xerox PARC and saw this very early prototype of a mouse and said, ooh, got to have one of those, right? And there was a lot that hadn't been worked out. For example, it had two wheels, so you could move it in the X, you know, you can move it horizontally, vertically, but if you wanted to go at an angle, that was a problem. So we, for example, came up with the idea that, ooh, maybe there should be a ball in there, right? And, you know, there were many, many, you know, small, you know, discoveries like that, but very much a group effort. There were probably six or seven people working at IDEO, and then, of course, there were people on the client side.
You couldn't have done the laptop without miniaturization.
Sure. So the laptop we did was actually pre-Apple. It was a company called Grid Systems. It was the first laptop in the history of the world. Grid, not so famous today, but they were really a pioneer. And we, for Grid, we came up with the idea, the concept that the laptop should be like a clamshell, that the hinge should be at the back, right? It seems dead obviously, but it was not at the time. There were portable computers in the shape of sewing machines with the keyboards clipped to the bottom and things like that. And so, so we watched people using existing tools and thought that if the screen would fold down over the keyboard, that would really work. And I guess it has worked all these years.
Well, these two things, of course, are basic to our world these days. Any other things that you came up with?
Oh, sure. I mean, we've done 5,000 things. We've worked on, you know, everything from toothpaste tubes to, you know, iPhone cases that shield your, you know, radiation away from your head. But these days, it's gone way beyond products. We work on physical environments. We work on services. We're doing things like trying to reinvent the school system for the country of Peru right now. And so we've taken the skill set of design, we've stretched it into design thinking, we call it, and you can apply that tool set to almost any problem.
It's often claimed that although other countries score better on various educational criteria, the United States is where the best ideas usually originate. Do you think that's true? I mean, I'm just thinking about Samsung and their success
sadly,
recently. That suggests that the United States doesn't hold a monopoly on innovation anymore.
So we helped Samsung with that process. We had a joint office with Samsung for 3 years in the early 2000s, during the time that they were really moving up, during the time in which they eclipsed Sony as a more valuable brand. And so I think, you know, we should come to grips with the fact that there are 200 sovereign nations in the world and that there's always going to be, wherever you are from, there's always going to be more ideas outside than inside. But what we can do is we can be a magnet for talent. We can be the kind of place that brilliant people want to come, you know, as they live up to their creative potential.
In a rapidly changing, hyper-competitive world, how do you convince business executives that they should focus on assembling diverse teams of creative risk-takers who engage in what you called relaxed attention?
Sure. Well, a really good thing for us, a really good thing has happened in, you know, since I started my career because, you know, in the old days, it felt like our kind of creative work was happening just at the kids' table, right? That the serious business of the company was somewhere else. It was in the boardroom or the conference room. And the business world has come to us. Our clients really believe that creativity is central to the enterprise, and it's only a question of how do we acquire it.
Do all of these ideas only apply to the business world? Can they be applied to just doing stuff at home?
Oh, sure, absolutely. You know, in the book we talk about, you know, what if you want to be known as giving the best dinner parties in town, right?
I definitely want to be known for that.
Yes, and so there's a whole technique we use is called mind mapping, where you draw a central idea in the center and you fill the page with ideas. And there's actually a mind map in the book of how to do a great dinner party.
What are the top three things to consider when you're trying to bring more creativity into the workplace? In some cases, I would think that you just have to break the mold that's already there.
Sure. Well, more than anything, if there's one single idea that runs through the whole book, it's going from planning to action, you know, having a bias towards action. You know, there's actually a great story in the book about WNYC. There's a guy near here named John Keefe who, you know, one of his coworkers said, hey, you know, I hate it that my mom standing on the street corner in New York City doesn't know where her bus is, doesn't know where it's coming. And he said, give me till the end of the day. And so he, in 24
hours, came up with this mapping project.
Came up with that prototype. And so it's not, let me think about that. Let me talk to a friend on the planning commission. It's like, let me see what I can do today. And he did it.
The Hasso Plattner Institute of Design at Stanford University, or D School, was founded by your brother David, mm-hmm. about to celebrate its 10th anniversary. What impact do you think that the school's had on the business community?
Sure. It's been quite influential. I mean, first of all, people from all over the world come to visit it. And by the way, you know, I'm not a Stanford guy at all. I'm a Berkeley guy, and those schools don't even always get along.
You were the political radical in the family?
Well, between Oberlin and Berkeley, you know, draw your own conclusion. But people have come, including businesses, including people from, you know, Hyatt Hotels to Procter & Gamble to whatever, and they are using these ideas, you know, this design thinking idea to improve their businesses.
Well, Stanford has been credited with, to some degree, the whole creation of Silicon Valley.
Right.
So the school understood that if it created a certain environment, that it would radiate out.
Right. And it started, you know, as a small program, this institute. But what's happening at Stanford is they're embedding the idea of creative confidence now into the entire school. I just welcomed a visitor, a guy named Dan Pink, wrote a great book called A Whole New Mind. He and his daughter were touring Stanford. And he says, Tom, you'll like this. He says, in the first paragraph, our tour guide said, what we do at Stanford is we try to instill creative confidence in all of our students. And so they clearly are embracing this idea.
Your brother has had some health problems. How's he doing?
He's actually great. But this book is really a direct result of that. In 2007, he had throat cancer, and they only gave him a 40% chance of surviving. And so tough year, and you know, I was by his side most of that year. And then as he emerged from cancer near the end of the year, we started making promises. We were afraid to talk about the future. But as it looked like he might survive, we started making plans. And one plan was to take a trip together, which we had never done as adults. But one was to do a project, and that project is this Creative Confidence book.
A collaborative project. Bring in other experts?
Oh, yeah. So we interviewed 100 people. As the source material, just as we talk about, you got to start with empathy. And then, we had lots of help, you know, from within IDEO and outside of IDEO in the process.
Tom Kelly is a partner at IDEO, the author of the best-selling book, The Art of Innovation, also 10 Faces of Innovation. He is an executive fellow at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. And his brother, David Kelly, his co-author in this book, is the founder of IDEO, one of the world's leading innovation and design firms, as well as he is the creator of the D School at Stanford University. Their book is called Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us All. It is published by Crown Business. And I thank you so much for being on our show today. It's been a real pleasure.
Great. Thank you.